Good to Peter, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, good, 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 good. You been watching the Grammys?
No, I've been sitting in an archive all day.
Oh.
That's what historians do.
Oh, true, of course. You're living out your own Dan Brown novel.
Yes, indeed, yes.
I hope you're evading the Illuminati.
Possibly.
Actually, they probably are coming for you, I have to be honest. Like, you do speak truth to power, so let's do some more of that today. Yeah. Speaking of the Grammys, I tell you, there's one uniting force, you know, like, you know how for a while everyone thanked God, and of course people are still doing that, but they are also saying two words, and if you don't mind my language, every single person seems to be standing up on the stage and saying, fuck ICE. So yeah. I thought maybe that might little bit be what we're talking about today.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's an amazingly public protest in a land which is so, you know, historically known for its protests, and now facing astonishing opposition to protest.
Yeah.
And, of course, it came... All the events came soon after Martin Luther King Day, and that was probably significant because Martin Luther King was renowned as, you know, somebody who encouraged people to break the law and to defy what was unjust. Mm. And I've heard his words used quite effectively as protests have built up. But I was especially intrigued to see the large number of clergy of different faiths massing in Minnesota and Minneapolis to oppose what ICE is doing. And I was really quite intrigued about that, and also aware that it goes both ways, because there was an incident early on in those protests when they began in during 22nd after Rene Good's death, where they broke into a Southern Baptist church in Minneapolis, where the supposedly one of the associate pastors, who is clearly only a part-time pastor, is the acting field office director of ICE in Minneapolis. Now, okay. That's pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, not surprisingly, at the next Sunday service, which is now a week and a half ago, a group of them broke into the service, followed by Don Lemon, the well-known reporter.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And began shouting, ICE out, and walked up to the pulpit and began sort of calling out the shame that should be upon this denomination.
Wow.
So pretty interesting. And see, that led up to Don Lemon's arrest subsequently.
Yes.
But it also exposed very sharply how there is one group of people that have been praying that ICE will rescue us from the way in which we're being filled with invaders. And on the other side, of course, remember that one of the most interesting people in Minneapolis is the Somali member of the House of Congress, the Somalian woman who's been the target of Trump's invective over the last little while. And so, I mean, there are religious dimensions in this dispute which are really intriguing. One of the things that I read was that clergy, evidently with some holidays on their hands, have massed to Minneapolis in the hundreds with their whistles to blow, because that's what they're doing, is they go around and spot ICE fans in operation. They blow their whistles to alert people that ICE has come.
Yeah, that's right.
And clergy dressed up in their clergy gowns are a bit of a... They're quite obviously a target in some way, and not popular with ICE, as you can imagine.
Yeah, but do you think... Do ICE give them special dispensation for being, you know, because it's a bad look to punch a priest?
No. That the interesting thing from what we can see is that ICE was furious about this, regarded it as unfair publicity, and in fact were perfectly willing to throw tear gas in the direction of clergy protesters.
Right.
And arrest a few of them. Of course, I mean, the protests are so extensive that they can't arrest everybody and they can't kill everybody, though they seem to be making a bit of an attempt with the Alex Pretty case.
My God.
It's interesting because looking at the sorts of people who've come, for a start, there was, do you remember Bishop Budd who preached that sermon at the Washington Cathedral?
Oh, yes, yeah. I was wondering what had happened to her. I thought she might have been whisked away.
No, she turned up in Minneapolis, and I think they were perhaps a little bit coy about arresting a bishop. I'm not sure. but there were quite a number of Unitarian Universalists, so especially clergy with more liberal theology seem to have been involved.
You can imagine.
But a surprising number of Catholics in the local Catholic diocese have together lifted up their voice in complaining of what ICE is doing.
That's good.
Of course, in New Zealand, this sort of protest would make no difference at all. I'm sure that there were clergy down protesting against Brian Tamaki at the bridge on Saturday, but they were not picked out particularly in the news reports on what happened there.
I suppose the newsworthy one happened when there were some clergy who chained themselves to the officers. That happened.
Yes, yeah. I think, I mean, religion counts for a good deal more in the States than it does in New Zealand.
Mm.
And so the hope was obviously to be influential and to summons people, and that clergy would be seen as leading something and perhaps that more articulate in saying why they were opposed to it. Of course, it may simply widen this very sharp gulf between conservative and religious liberals, possibly.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. But I think that what the risk of not doing that is to make it play right into, you know, Trump's, or you know, that crowd's narrative that this is Christianity is pro ICE and it's so weird, isn't it?
And it wasn't just Christians, by the way. You have Jews, Muslims, also joining in these protests.
Oh, that's good.
Jews have played quite an influential role. Of course, I mean, this is the city where George Floyd was killed back in 2020.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, it's a poor city, basically, and with a high working class presence, and it does have significant numbers of refugees living in the city. It's not, I mean, it wasn't by coincidence that the Somalian rep in the House of Congress was there in Minneapolis. She represents a significant proportion of the city who are migrants from Africa and from Asia.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I would have liked to have heard a stronger Muslim voice, but that just may have been the way that reporting goes on in the US.
Mm.
I'm not sure. I think it's harder for Muslims to organize in these because, in a way, the imam of particular mosques isn't necessarily full-time in doing this. And is expected to devote themselves pretty solely to the work of preparing their Friday sermon.
Yes.
But, you know, during the Vietnam War, the clergy protests were quite significant in the States, and it did deeply divide churches. And we may be watching again a polarization in religion, which would make sense because the polarization is entering into every part of American politics at the moment.
Well, it's It's exposing something that's real, I suppose. It's the division is real. There are, you know, and I don't know if I'm just, well, I am oversimplifying it, but it's sort of, there are people who think that everyone, in terms of religion, that everyone deserves to be treated the same, and then some, there are some that kind of inexplicably, and, you know, in this case, the Christian right does seem to have this idea that white is best and that everyone else should suffer and go home. It just doesn't, I'm trying to figure out where in the Bible, maybe they're talking about some Old Testament battle or something where there's, you know, it was great to smite the enemy or something, you know. It doesn't feel very New Testament to me, all this stuff.
Well, of course, in the Old Testament, and, you know, Jews will remind you that there are key people like Ruth, in the book of Ruth, who are striking examples of refugees from another country who were made welcome in Israel.
Mm.
Not a message, I might say, that current Israelis seem to have taken to heart very much.
Fair to say.
But it's there in their tradition, and so it really can be significantly appealed to. And, I mean, the issue does become a lot more complicated in places in Europe where the numbers have just overwhelmed the social services and they don't know how they can possibly deal with so many people who've fled from North Africa. And especially when they're essentially economic refugees because of the failure of their economies at home, and they're facing starvation.
Right.
And so they flee. But the normal grounds that are granted for refugees are that they're political refugees. That's the usual ground that will be accepted. But the US is not like this. Of course, there are numbers that come across the Mexican border.
Yeah.
And they are economic refugees. But those that come from Africa and the like, I mean, how did they get there? It's no obvious route, is it?
Mm. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's such a strange one because it's really easy for some people to just turn around and say, on the topic of refugees, well, this shouldn't be our problem. But it's really is saying, oh, well, you know, go back and die half the time,
yeah,
isn't
it? And that's the issue, isn't it? That if there are no other options, we actually somehow have some moral obligation to do something. I listened to a really interesting podcast this morning by Peter Singer, who's the, and he's not a religious person, but he's working, he has developed an ethic which says that the highest obligation anybody has is to stop the death of the largest number of people that you can stop.
Mm.
And so that therefore it's critical that, for example, wealthy people should be paying significantly more than others into funds that will try to deal with poverty. And it's a really interesting argument because he rejects the notion that your first obligation is to defend your next-door neighbour or your relation.
Yeah.
He says that the obligation actually is universal. And when we start putting our local feeling of loyalty in front of the needs that are much, much larger, then actually we're acting in an immoral way.
Mm.
It's a very interesting argument.
It is, yeah, because it's easy to think of, you know, to think you're being big-hearted by considering your own town or city or neighbourhood, because in your mind that's quite a big catch-all of people, you know, and you think, well, I'm not just thinking of myself. I'm thinking of, you know, Mr. Bun the Baker and whatever it is. I'm thinking of everybody who I live near, but it is, you know, the world is so much bigger than.
Yes, well, he put it dramatically when he said that if it was a choice between saving your own child and saving thousands of children, the moral thing to do is to save the thousands, not the person who's closest to you.
Mm.
Now, that's putting it, that's tough. That's a very tough call. I think most people would find that very difficult to follow. But he argues that it is the moral thing to do.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, text in, would you save your child or thousands of others? Let's do it's such an interesting one, isn't it? Because when you're confronted with the decision like that, not that we necessarily are exactly, but, you know, societally we are, it is an interesting conundrum.
And,
you know, yeah, you've got, and depending on who's at the top and what sort of heart they've got, you know, you do see people getting turned back and drowning and dying, and it's a really tricky one. Trickier than I think Bishop Tamaki is painting. You know, it's a weird time.
Yeah, it is a weird time, but it's more than weird in Minneapolis. You know, you're facing quite profound moral issues.
Mm.
And see, most people duck moral issues. They just think they're too hard.
Yeah. Well, they got to be sorted. Someone's got to do it.
So. They won't go away.
That's indeed. Right. Well, thank you for your time, Peter. And as always, we keep watching with open eyes and we await your next discussion topic.
Very good.
Thank you very much and enjoy the archives.
See you.
Bye-bye. Bye.